Do you have an AI agent assigned to every single user in your app, maximizing their engagement, retention, and monetization? Hello and welcome to Growth Masterminds. My name is John Kutzer. I was recently at MAU Mobile Apps Unlocked in Vegas. It was awesome. I happened to meet a guy in the speaker room. We started chatting about mobile user engagement because that's what normal people do when they just meet. He mentioned something about an AI agent for each user, as in one AI agent assigned to each individual user. Well, boom, I was hooked. I know something about engagement and retention. I did the Retention Masterclass podcast with Peggy Ann Saltz for a couple of years, talked to a lot of experts, but I hadn't heard of this. So here's a guy. Turns out he's a data scientist at a company named AMP. Sean Wheeler, welcome to Growth Masterminds.
Thanks for having me.
Super pumped to have you, and it's a cool topic and one we don't talk about enough. We're often talking about acquisition. How do you get? How do you find? You know, how do you acquire new users? And that's great and that's wonderful. But we also all know if the bucket has big leaks in it, it doesn't matter how much you spend, it doesn't matter how many users you get. They're just coming out the bottom end. So it's timely to talk about this. I want to start here. I want to start with messaging. And so when we started chatting and you told me a little bit about what you do and what your company does, I showed you my favorite game. And I'm not going to say the name right here. But the first thing I get every time I open this game is three pop-ups. So stuff they want me to buy, stuff they want me to get or do. And they have essentially trained me to click away any pop-ups instantly. Every time I open the app, every time I restart the app, click the pop-up. Tap, get and start playing my game. They've trained me to do that. And it's interesting, if I ever look at them, there's a couple that I don't even recognize. Like, it's not even a section of the game that I play. I don't even know what that thing would be for if I would spend money on it. Talking about the impact of that kind of messaging strategy.
That's really kind of the standard messaging strategy in the industry right now. It's baked into the tools. I mean, I'm not going to blame the people who are writing those messages. They're actually forced into it. So when you are trying to reach out to your users, every user on an app is an individual. They have a different background, different preferences, different patterns, different things are going to motivate them or activate them. And there isn't any data science team big enough that they could actually tease out all those individual patterns. Even if there was, there's no CRM team big enough that they could actually act on all those patterns. So what the standard way of doing things now is to create some sort of CDP-like infrastructure where you stand up actionable insights, where you have your data scientists or analysts take whatever data you have and try to turn it into simplified rules. Here are different segments you could measure. Here's different triggers you could use to decide to send out a message. And it's not because those are really good representations of the diversity of your user base. It's because the humans on your team who actually have to communicate with them can't handle the diversity. It's just too much. And so when you look at any of the standard CRM or user engagement tools, anything like that, it's all structured around, like, you set a campaign, you assign it to segments, maybe you'll put a trigger in, and that's what you have go out. And you send it out, and you've done the thing, but what do you learn from that? Like, there's no follow-up. The next time you have to make it from scratch again, then make it from scratch again. And so there's no incremental improvement over time. And that's, there aren't a whole lot of options out there for people to be able to break out of that cycle.
That resonates with me because, like, I'll notice enough about those pop-ups that I'm clicking away to notice that, you know, occasionally they change. There's a holiday, so there's something themed. Different offer. And, you know, I have spent probably, I don't know, $300-$400 in this game or something like that, right? So they know that I will occasionally look at something. Maybe I'm getting really stuck, or, you know, I just get really angry about getting beaten by guys with more ships or bigger weapons or something like that, right? And so you know, eventually I'll start looking at some stuff. And so I guess they feel at that point that it's worked. But wouldn't it be better to, hey, not just send out those all the time, but actually learn, hey, he's clicked that away 30 times. I'm not going to send it another 10 times.
Exactly. I mean, you even just now, you've mentioned several different reasons why you engage with the app. You like the competition. Sometimes it's just, it's something you just like to spend time in. Can alleviate boredom. There's a monetary aspect to it. There's all these different ways that you get value from that experience. You haven't deleted the app. You still get something from it. But you would never know that from the messaging. The messaging is always like, it's as if you're being, I mean, they're treating you the same as your 50,000 closest friends on the app. You're all the same. You have the same motivations. You're all doing this for the same reason. It could be that them sending you those notifications would be just fine if they framed them differently. It may be that they're just, it's getting to you at a play at a time when you're not going to click at them anyway. If they send it to you right when you're working at something, you're going to ignore it anyway. So there's this need to learn, like, when are you free? When are you likely to be more likely to engage with a push notification than you would be normally? But then what's the different, can they point you to a particular feature in the app that you're going to engage with more? Could they frame it in terms of a particular value? Could they provide a more direct recommendation? So instead of just, hey, come to the app, like, hey, can we deep link you to a specific place that we think you want? So the message actually becomes an extension of the UI rather than a message. Mm-hmm. Like there's all these different ways that, I mean, push notifications, in my opinion, are really kind of like the underutilized resource for apps. They're cheap to send. And there's so much you can do with them, not only to try to capture a user's attention, but to experiment, to learn what captures a user's attention. It's an inexpensive experiment to run.
Let's talk about the alternative to this sort of spray and pray approach, or even, you know, some of the more sophisticated segmentation approaches and stuff like that. You talked to me about having an AI agent assigned to each individual user. That sounds pretty sci-fi. It sounds pretty advanced. It also sounds like, holy shit, that's the way to do it. Talk about what you do and how it works.
So it would have sounded a lot more sci-fi before LLMs like ChatGPT came on the scene. An LLM is a type of agent. An agent is just a type of AI that can receive guardrails, and then it can act autonomously within those guardrails. Now, with an LLM, it's taking in language as guardrails and outputting. So you say, I want you to talk about this particular subject, and I want you to talk about it in German, and it will do that. You say, okay, I want to talk about the same subject, but I want you to talk about it in Python, and it will output code for you. Like, but it's able to be creative based on its training data. But it still respects to a larger set the boundaries that you give it. Our agents, instead of inputting and outputting language, they input and output behavior. So when we feed in the event stream for the app, all of it, like that's what, if you look at the current tools, they'll say, oh, we'll act on your events, and then they'll install like five. You can point to like your conversion event and maybe an add to cart or something like that. But I mean, the apps we work with, there's upwards of, I mean, we work with apps that easily have over 400 different types of instrument events. That's all information, like every button click, every page visited, whether it's on a site or an app. And you can take all of that into the agent and process it in a way that the agent can then make decisions about how likely are you to move towards an end goal if it makes a certain decision? What are the options for making a decision? How could it frame that? When can it send to you? What channel could it use? All of those kinds of behavioral decisions that are normally made by a CRM team, many, many of them can actually be made very reasonably by an AI agent that's properly structured. I would never advise any CRM team to just throw things into GPT and then send them out. That's a recipe for disaster. But if you have good control over your content, and their content is actually guardrails, you say, okay, agent, I want you to make sure that you talk within these parameters, use this type of language, things like that, they can make tons of reasonable decisions about how to reach out to users.
It's super interesting to hear that. And a couple things come up in my mind as I hear you speaking about that. One is, you know, how much should you instrument in your app? You know, does it get computationally expensive if you over instrument things in your app and every little thing sends a little ping, a little postback, a little notification, a little data package somewhere? But on the other hand, is it likely that you actually don't really know what causes or what sequence of events cause outcomes that you like? You have some clue, but you've been sort of, you know, in a dark place with mittens on your hands and goggles over your eyes, and you can't see through. And maybe if you almost over instrument your app, you'll find really interesting correlations between what happens. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what we found. We work with a large e-commerce app in Southeast Asia, where part of how we train our agents is we create what are called surrogate models. So that's where you take a goal event, say like a purchase, but then you train a model to look at how much each other type of event contributes to the likelihood that a user is going to end up doing that goal. What that does for the agent is it gives it the ability to mimic a basic human capability, which is being able to infer sort of the direction a person is going. Like if you're talking to a person and you're trying to convince them of something, a human can usually tell from just visual cues and verbal cues, like, okay, are they starting to buy into this a little bit, or are they kind of walking away? But a lot of basic machine learning just takes a goal event like a purchase, and it's just, did they do it or didn't they? There's no sense of directionality. But a surrogate model actually gives the agent the ability to say, all right, they're not making a purchase right now, but they did X, Y, and Z, and that's moving us in the right direction. So once we do that, we introspect on those. And we found in the case of this particular customer, there were several events that you wouldn't be surprised led to a higher probability of a purchase. Adding to cart is a very strong signal. But one that really surprised us was wish list. It wasn't adding to wish list. It was removing from wish list made them more likely to purchase. And the best we can figure out is that it was actually, if you are removing something from your wish list, you are curating your to-do list of things you want to buy. Whereas you could just be adding stuff like, oh, I like that. It's like a Pinterest board. It's like you put it on there and you forget about it. But if you're actually removing things, it means you're actively making decisions about what you might want to buy in the future, which means it's in that particular customer's case, and in other customers that have wish lists, we haven't found that necessarily. But in this particular customer's case, removing from wish list was actually a strong leading indicator of purchase.
What's interesting in what you're saying is that it strikes me that the monetization in different verticals is very, very different. Of course, some verticals, health, fitness, music, media, subscription is a big deal. And, mm-hmm. There's a path and there's a model towards that, right? In others, ad monetization, media type things, ad monetization is a big deal. In others, gaming, in-app purchase, subscriptions to some extent as well.
Yeah.
But all these verticals, there's different types of behavior that people are engaging in that will show a greater or lesser degree of interest in an actual purchase. So if you apply like one sort of software model to all apps and games, you're more likely than not to be wrong. Am I correct?
So if you approach it all in terms of a static rules engine, yes, you're headed for trouble. If you approach it all with a similar architecture, and this is the data scientist in me speaking, I think that's actually, there's fewer differences between those industries than are readily apparent when you first look at them. You're like, okay, a subscription is totally different than like e-commerce, where you go on, people could buy anything any day, where a subscription only happens on a certain cadence and it's kind of a lag. But as long as you build in like I was talking about surrogate models, you build in the ability for an agent to recognize early signals of an eventual goal event, you can actually treat a lot of those problems in very similar ways. The payoff comes later in the case of, say, a subscription service, but we work with subscription services, and we're able to handle their use cases just as well. It's a unified framework but the, all of the details look very, very different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Every time you say surrogate, I have to think of a Bruce Willis science fiction movie. But it's all good.
It's not my choice of term. It's standard industry.
It's funny because what you're doing essentially is you're harnessing first party data. And that's really important because for a bunch of reasons. One, data is at a premium right now. Third party data is at a super high premium. It's almost impossible to get. It's privacy regulation and change and legislation has just really impacted the landscape there. So first party data is a big deal, but you look at most app publishers, especially indies, they might think, I have no first party data. What do I have? But actually, if you look at all the things that people are doing, even if you have an app that has 100,000 users or 500,000 users, there's an immense amount of data that they're creating every single day about what people are doing or not doing and how that leads or doesn't lead to monetization, engagement, or retention.
Now, that's true. But at the same time, I think a lot, there's been a blind faith in data, while we're talking about movie
reference. Data scientists.
There's been a field of dreams approach data that if you build the systems, then the value will come. Yes. And that simply hasn't happened in a lot of cases. I think it's because the value inherent in the most actionable value of data for a business is data that helps you get at the why of a user's behavior. It's not just, oh yeah, they're more likely to purchase. That doesn't, I mean, being able to predict that can be useful, but it's more useful to say they're more likely to purchase if I do something. Mm-hmm. And data by itself, like when you instrument an app, it's been instrumented for all different kinds of reasons, usually associated with the nuances of how your engineering organization works. Like it's not clean data. And taking all of that, staging it and transforming it, actually only you get limited value out of that. What really is the value of using an agentic approach to your communication with your users is that you can actually create new data by labeling your content. Companies like Spotify do this already. Spotify has like 6,000 music genres. There's 6,000 music genres. They use that really complex set of labels in order to find similarities between content. So when they recommend a piece of music and someone responds to it or doesn't respond to it, they now have new data. This person showed a positive or negative signal towards this particular thing that's related to other things, and they can now propagate that. Netflix does the same thing. Like, yes, they have genres, but then they also put in all these human like conversational tags like dark and gritty and things like that. That's one of the things we do is when people write content in our system, you can create a message that has a particular value proposition and you can label it. This is the kind of value proposition it is. And then you can create alternates and change the labels on those. Once you have that, not only are you then generating more actionable first party data, but the responses to that information, those signals that you're sending out, are actually zero party data. It's a survey without a survey. You're able to send out that information and find out, infer that each of your users have this much probability of responding to a cost savings value proposition as opposed to a bestseller value proposition, things like that. That I think that's the real value that people have been missing in data. It's not about harnessing all the historical data you have. There's uses in that. I'd have to turn in my data science like membership card if I said there wasn't. But the real value is in having a system that becomes a data factory that experiments with things, looks at the results, and then feed that back in, and that becomes your data as well, and you use that for the next decision.
I love that. I thought you were a data science heretic when you started that answer.
Yeah.
No worries. And I love that term, agentic approach, like an agent approach, agentic approach. I've never heard that before, but that's cool. That makes a ton of sense because the faster you're getting that data that you understand and that you're feeding the data and learning from, the faster your learning cycle happens and the faster you're getting better. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, let's talk about impact. Let's say you do all this, and obviously you have done it with many, many clients. what's the impact? If somebody comes off like a traditional live ops system, a traditional sort of mobile CRM type of system, what's the impact? How much better do they get?
So there's different ways you could look at this. The story I like to tell about this is actually another one of our customers that, in the beginning of, 2023, they had a change in leadership. We'd been working with them for a few months, but then they got a new VP. The VP was like, "What's this AMP thing? I don't want to pay for it. Shut it down." And so the person who'd been working with us came and said, I've just lost my budget for this. I'm sorry. They said, "We have to do, we're finding efficiencies and you're an efficiency." So we said, all right. I mean, obviously there's nothing we can do about that. We'll respect that decision. But our champion within the organization said, I'm worried about this. He said, you've been doing a lot of things that we haven't been able to do on they had been using Braze previously. And so he said, what I want to do, can we do a staged shutdown where you take all of the, responsive messaging, the triggered stuff, which we were still personalizing, because even if your trigger is an abandoned cart message, do you send the message an hour after, 2 days after? Do you send three messages? Do you just send one? There's all these questions about, and also what's the content channel of the message? We were personalizing all of that. He said, what we're going to do is try to create those same things as triggers in a regular CRM system. And so that way we can kind of monitor how this is going to look when we shut AMP down. And so I have the graph that I often will use in presentations, because you can see that you were looking at their revenue that they're getting from their users for push notifications. And it's like up here, and you can tell like right soon after that is when they turned it off, and it goes down, 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 down. And right about at the bottom is the point where he actually texted us in the middle of the night, and he said, you need to turn it back on. And we said, you said you didn't have the budget. And he says, he just said we will have the budget. You need to have it back on by tomorrow. So it's actually noticeable in like bottom line. It's really gratifying when for instance, we work with a large food delivery app in India, and a lot of times when you're working in SaaS, like most companies don't trust you to show them your own value. They want to like, you can show them numbers and they're like, oh, of course your numbers are going to look good. So they just said, we want to see the raw data or what you sent. Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they're like, you need to give us a dump of the messages you have been sending, and then we are going to determine what your value is. And so we gave it to them. Their data science team went away for a few weeks and they came back and they're like, you're getting us 700 extra orders a day. So we had no involvement in that analysis. So those kinds of things are gratifying. We have done, in some cases, we've been able to find customers who are willing to let us do a more randomized trial. For example, we worked with an e-commerce app in the Gulf States where we randomly partitioned their user base into like a certain percentage got messaged through AMP agents, and then a certain message continued to get messaged through their more manual processes using their CRM tool. And then a small percentage actually just stopped. We stopped messaging them altogether so they could be a holdout control, so we could see what was normal. And so we ran that for, I think, 11 weeks. For 8 weeks, we messaged for 9 different product categories, everything from toys to consumer electronics. And then for 3 weeks, we ended up adding in hefty incentives, like 50 to 70% off each time we sent out. And just head-to-head comparison of the performance in terms of how many users came to the app after we messaged, we beat them a little more than half the time. But once we looked at the control group, the holdout group, that to see, okay, at the time we sent a message, whether it was an AMP message or a manual message, how many of the control users also came on the app at that time? Basically, what was like, if you message, this is common actually, a lot of systems will do things that they call like intelligent timing, where they will, they'll look at each user and they'll say, okay, this user tends to be on the app at Friday at 6 o'clock. Therefore, when you schedule a message, we'll message them at Friday at 6 o'clock, mm-hmm. which is a really bad idea, because then you're just bugging them to do the thing they're already doing. It's like you're hanging up the sign on the bathroom door as they walk in.
Yeah, or they're buying the square and they and you message about the triangle or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Interrupting their process.
Yes. Or even worse, you send them 50% off to do the thing that they were.
But they were going to pile on.
Yeah, to do the thing they would want to do anyway. So when we looked at the control group, the baseline activation of the control group was actually a good several percentage points higher for the manual process because they were sending it at the busy times on the app. So once you accounted for the differences in baseline from the control, we were getting anywhere from 10 to 40% higher activation in every category in with incentive or without incentive, with the exception of one case. There was one case where they beat us. I think it was consumer electronics with an incentive, and we lost by 0.5%.
Well, what's also interesting, because you started that answer by talking about, you know, there's many different ways to measure that, right? How much more effective are we? And one of those won't show up on a balance sheet, at least not immediately. One of those is you know, how much retention is impacted. Do people stay longer? What's the volume of messaging? Can you achieve an increase in monetization with a decrease in messaging? In other words, you're bugging people less and making more money. Does that increase people's overall happiness for your with your brand, with your product, with your service, whatever it is, right? So there's a lot of different ways and a lot of complexities in measuring, is this better?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There. In fact, we work with a nursing on-demand app in the U.S. So it was where they put out, the hospital says, we have this shift. Does anyone want to take it? And they were trying to fill last-minute shifts. And their standard way of doing this was the spray and pray method. Like you said, like they blast out to everyone, hey, there's these shifts. We need you to fill them. And so when we took that over, they were actually using SMS to do this. So that's expensive. Like push notifications, way really cheap compared to sending out SMS. So we can work with any what we call a surface. So there's messaging surfaces like email or push notification, SMS, WhatsApp. There's also surfaces within your actual app, dynamically changing the content as someone browses. So we took over their SMS. And we increased their activation by, I think if I remember correctly, it was 9%, but we reduced their SMS volume by 75%. That was savings in the hundreds of thousands per year. Just because they weren't bugging people who didn't need to be bugged anymore, because we could recognize like this person never accepts a shift on a Thursday night. So why message them about a last minute shift on a Thursday night? It's pointless.
Wow. What's fascinating about that example is I would never have thought in a million years that a service like yours would be embedded in an app that is scheduling nurses for a major hospital or hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I expect this in gaming. I expect this in, you know, betting. I expect this in retail. I expect this in health and fitness, media, streaming, whatever. I did not expect this in a utility app.
We haven't found many cases where it's not applicable, actually. I mean, if you have an app where the thing you want people to do only happens like once every 5 months, every year, something like that, then yeah, there's just not enough signal there to act on. But any of these cases, like this nursing app isn't huge compared to, say, an e-commerce app. It's big for what it is, but not big in the world of apps. But the size of the user base doesn't really so much matter for the learning, because it's all about individual agents tracking their assigned user. And then, yes, talking to the other agents, comparing notes, learning things. But what really matters is the frequency of contact. And it could be that if you're a nurse, you actually accept, you at least are potentially interested in accepting a shift every other day, every 3 days, some of them even every day, which actually isn't all that different from an e-commerce situation.
I have my wife has a friend who's a nurse, and she only accepts those kinds of shifts because they're usually double time or triple time because they really are needed.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, this has been a lot of fun, Sean. Great to chat with you. Super cool to hear about what you guys are doing. Thank you for taking the time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This is great.